give you all these things. In your son's name. Amen.
Amen. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for worshiping with us in the snow. Just when you thought winter was over, it is back with a vengeance. Somebody's happy. Marcy's happy about the snow. Yeah, all right. All right. I think I lived on the East Coast too long. I came out here to get away from the snow. That's why I'm here in Washington State. Hey, we're going to be in Genesis 43 today. We're going to continue our sermon series on the life of Joseph. So go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 43. Have you ever been convinced that God is out to get you? You know, people often come to me when they're going through something hard. You know, they want me to pray for them, or maybe they're seeking some kind of guidance. And often when they're describing to me their situation, they're describing to me what they're going through and the hardship that they're facing, they say things like, I can't help but feel that God is punishing me because I fill in the blank. And then they tell me something that they did. Have you ever felt that way? God is punishing me because I fill in the blank. Well, today we're going to see some guys wrestling with that issue. Now, these guys, Joseph's brothers, they did something really bad, all right? Probably worse than anything you've ever done. They conspired together to murder their brother, and then at the last moment, they decided to sell him into slavery instead. And if you're here today and you've done something worse than that, well, I'm glad you're here. You're in the right place. But I suspect that most of you have never done anything that bad. But at the same time, I also suspect that most of you have done something that you regret. And I think that sometimes you might think about that something every time something bad happens to you, and you might wonder, oh, here we go. God is punishing me for whatever that thing is. Well, if this is you, I hope that our time with Joseph today teaches you something or shows you something about God. Okay, that's my hope for today. Now, last week we saw Joseph finally come face to face with his brothers. Now, like I said, 13 years previously they had conspired together to murder him, and then only at the last moment they decided to sell him into slavery instead. And then slavery turned into prison time for Joseph. But then after 13 years a slave and a prisoner, finally Joseph was elevated to be like the second in command, the second most powerful man in Egypt, which is the most powerful nation in the world at the time, and he is under only Pharaoh himself. Now, in this posh new government job that Joseph is given, he oversees grain distribution for all of Egypt, and wouldn't you know it, but a famine strikes the whole world, and his family is forced to come down to Egypt to buy grain. And so Joseph finds himself face to face with these brothers that almost killed him and decided instead to sell him into slavery. Now, we've been tracking with Joseph for a long time now in this sermon series, and we have seen God's faithfulness to him. God has just been really good to Joseph, and he's empowered him to forgive his family of origin. Joseph doesn't hold a grudge. He doesn't want revenge. He doesn't want vindication. Like, he's over all of that stuff. What Joseph really wants is reconciliation. He wants his family back. But he doesn't know if he can trust them. Because after all, the last time they were all together, they almost killed him, right? I mean, you think your last family gathering had some drama. You know, that's what Joseph is looking at. And so the brothers, they come face to face with Joseph, and they don't recognize him in his Egyptian garb, and they don't recognize him because he's so important and high and lifted up. And Joseph pretends that he doesn't recognize them. And the text says that he even speaks harshly to them. So he knows that they don't know who he is, and he even kind of plays it up, and he's mean to them. He doesn't even tell them his name. Just throughout the text, whenever they talk about him, they refer to him as the man. Okay, and he accuses them of being spies, and he threatens to lock them up in prison. And at this, the brothers, they like start to panic, and they're like, we're not spies. We're just 12 brothers, the sons of one man, and one of the brothers, he's no more, and the other brother, he's back home with our dad. And remember, this is a family that's super dysfunctional, okay? Jacob, the dad, he has kids with 4 different women, and he doesn't hide the fact that he loves only one of those women, Rachel, who is, by this point in the story, she's deceased, but she was the only one of the 4 that he loved, and the other 3 were just kind of along for the ride. And then to make matters worse, he's got all these kids, and yet he shows favoritism to Rachel, the woman he loved, her 2 boys, he shows favoritism to them, Joseph and Benjamin. And it started with Joseph. He showed favoritism to Joseph, and it was so bad that Joseph's brothers, this is the reason why they wanted to kill him. So they sell Joseph into slavery, and then with him out of the picture, Jacob's favoritism moves to Benjamin. And in fact, that is why only 10 of the brothers went to Egypt to get grain, because Jacob didn't want anything bad to happen to Benjamin. He didn't want Benjamin to get hurt. So Joseph and Benjamin, they have the same mom. And so when Joseph sees, you know, all of his brothers there and Benjamin's not there, he really wants to see Benjamin. And so he's still kind of playing up this act that he's doing because he knows that they don't recognize him. And he's like, "You guys are spies. I should lock you up in jail. But luckily for you, I fear God. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm only going to keep one of you." And he chooses Simeon. That's the one he's going to keep. And then he continues. He says, "I'm going to sell you the grain that you want, but if you ever want to see your brother again, you need to go back home to your dad, you need to get your younger brother, and you need to bring him back here. And if you do that, when I see your younger brother, I will know that you're telling the truth and that you're not spies, and then I'll let your brother Simeon go. But until then, if you don't do that, you'll never see him again." And so the brothers, they go home without Simeon. And then to make matters worse, when they get home, they open up their bags to get the grain and they discover that the money that they brought with them to Egypt to buy the grain has been put back in their bags. And they don't know this, but Joseph was actually the one who did that. He gave the order to his steward. He's like, "Hey, go ahead and put their money back in their bags." He's being kind to them. But Joseph didn't tell anyone that he did this. And so when the brothers see that their money is in the bag, they're like, "Oh no, the man in Egypt, he already thinks we're spies. He's already holding our brother hostage. He is gonna like rage out and start flipping over tables if he finds out that we took this grain without paying for it. He's gonna think that we stole it. And so there's no way that we can go back to Egypt and face him now. Like, what can we do?" And then Reuben chimes in and he's like, "Well, you know why God is doing this to us, right? It's because of Joseph. It's because of what we did to Joseph." He's like, "I told you not to hurt the boy, but God saw what we did and now he is bringing it back on our heads." Have you ever been there, Reuben? That's where Joseph's brothers are. So they don't know what to do. And they think that all of this trouble that they're in, all this hardship that they're facing is because God is punishing them for what they did to Joseph. It's karma. And that's a key part of this narrative. So as we read chapter 43 today, this is a key part of what we're going to see is that the brothers believe that all of this bad stuff is happening to them because it's a reckoning. It's God is bringing it back on them because of what they did to Joseph 13 years previous. And so that brings us to chapter 43. The brothers, they're back home. They brought back grain with them. That's what they were sent to Egypt to get. They bring back grain, but they don't bring back their brother Simeon. And they can't get Simeon back until they bring Benjamin back to Egypt. But they know their dad, Jacob, he's not going to have any of that. Okay, that's not going to happen. All right, what are they going to do? Let's see here, starting in verse 1 of chapter 43. It says, "Now there was the famine was severe in the land. And when they had eaten the grain that they brought back from Egypt, their father said to them, 'Go again and buy us a little food.' But Judah said to him, 'The man solemnly warned us, saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' Now, if you'll send our brother with us, we'll go down to buy you food. But if you will not send him, we won't go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. And then Israel's Jacob, by the way. Israel said, why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother? And they replied, well, the man, he questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, is your father alive? Do you have another brother? And what we told him was an answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, bring your brother down? And Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and also our little ones. We and you and our little ones. I will be a pledge for his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would have returned twice. Okay, let's stop there for a second. All right, so the famine is really severe, and it's not long before they eat up all of this food that they brought back from Egypt the first time they went. And so they're basically back in the same exact place that they were at the very beginning of chapter 42. They've got no food. It's the middle of a famine. Only this time, the guy that they have to buy the food from, he thinks that they stole from him the first time they went down there. So actually, they're in a worse spot that they were in the beginning of chapter 42 from their perspective. All right, and so Jacob says to his son, he's like, go back down to Egypt and buy some more food. And then Judah reminds him, he's like, Dad, we can't go back there. The man told us not to come back without our youngest brother. If we go back there without Benjamin, he's not even going to talk to us. Plus, there's this whole issue with the money mix-up. He thinks we stole from him, so if we go back, there's a good chance that we will all end up in prison. And so at this, like, Jacob freaks out, and he's like, oh, why did you have to tell him that you had another brother? Do you really hate me that much that you had to say that? And then, Judah's like, Dad, you know, he asked questions. We had to answer his questions. We couldn't lie to him. And regardless of why it happened, the fact is, we have to go down to get Egypt, or we have to go down to Egypt to get grain, or we are all going to die. That means us, that means you, that means Benjamin. We are all going to die. If we don't bring Benjamin with us to Egypt, the man, he won't even talk to us. So our choice is take Benjamin to Egypt or we all die. Now there's one significant detail in this whole arrangement that they had with the man that's like not even mentioned in this text at all. There's one thing, like, they don't even mention it. What was the thing that they left back in Egypt as collateral that they would come back with Benjamin? What was it? You guys can answer. Simeon. Yeah, right, Simeon. They don't even mention him here, okay? The man, he is holding Simeon hostage for ransom in Egypt, and it's not even brought up as a possible reason to go back. And Judah, he even says, he's like, if we had left right away, we could have gone there and back twice. And so Simeon, it's like not even an issue. It's not until they run out of food that Jacob says, okay, now we can send him back. So what does this tell us about the family situation? It tells us that Jacob has not gotten over his favoritism issues. Okay, previously, Jacob had shown favoritism to Joseph, and it was so bad that it almost got Joseph killed. And now, 13 years later, more than that, he hasn't changed. He's still showing favoritism, only now it's shifted and it's on Benjamin. What do these brothers have to do to get their dad's attention? I mean, they're like, Dad, like, Simeon is your son. Like, don't you even care that the man is holding him hostage? I mean, what does he have to do to get you to love him? And Jacob's like, I don't know. Maybe if he did something cool, like invent a musical instrument made out of Furbies.
Furbies, I guarantee a lot of you have one of these somewhere, deep down in a basement, in a cardboard box, probably still talking to itself. But maybe there's a use for these annoyingly endearing little creatures. What about Furbies on a stick? Starting little dream boats, a use. And here's a concept picture from a few years ago. ago of the machine in question. And finally, after trawling through eBay, rummaging through charity shops up and down the land, and a heck of a lot of soldering, I present to you the Fermi organ.
Right, that is amazing. If you want to know what you could do for the next 7 years of your life, and a lot of money, at the end he thanks all his donors, and it's a lot of money he spent. If you can't laugh in church, where can you laugh, right? Right. G.K. Chesterton said, Satan fell by the force of gravity. You see what he did there? Right. We take ourselves too seriously. But anyway, Furbies aside, Jacob has not changed. He's still showing favoritism, and now he's just kind of, he shifted it from Joseph, and now it's all on Benjamin. He doesn't want to put Benjamin at risk, not even to save Simeon. It's just not worth it. And it's not until they're out of food that he decides, okay, we got to do something. Now let's see what they do here. Verse 11. It says, then their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm, a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds, and take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. And take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. And may God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved." All right, stop there. So Jacob, you know, he recognizes there's really not much of a choice here. Okay? His hand has been forced because of the famine. There's no sign that it's letting up. They're out of food. And if they don't go down to Egypt to get grain, they're all going to starve, including Benjamin. And so Jacob, he doesn't want to risk sending Benjamin, but he recognizes that there's no chance of survival without grain from Egypt, and there's no grain from Egypt without sending Benjamin. And so he says, okay, if we have to send Benjamin, this is what we're going to do. I want you to take like some of the choicest fruits of our land. And then he lists some of them. He's like, take some balm and some honey and some myrrh and stuff like that. There's a whole list of things. And he's like, and then also take double of the money, you know, some from the last time you went and then some for this time. And so Jacob, he sends, you know, the money from the last trip, he sends money for this trip, and then he sends all of these gifts along in front of them to kind of appease the man. Now, does this idea of sending gifts ahead to appease someone sound familiar in the life of Jacob? Those of you maybe who were here last year when we did a whole sermon series on Jacob's story, when else in Jacob's life did he do this? And you can answer this question. With Esau, right? Chapter 32, he does it to Esau. Remember, Esau wanted to kill Jacob, and so Jacob has to flee for his life. He's living with his uncle Laban for like 20 years. This is when he gets married, has kids, and then finally he decides, okay, I think it's safe for me to go back home, but he's not sure if Esau still wants to kill him. And so what he does is he sends all of these gifts ahead to appease Esau, and it works. And so now he wants to do the same thing with the man in Egypt. And what does this tell us about Jacob? Well, it tells us that he's afraid. He's afraid. He's afraid of what the man in Egypt is going to do to Benjamin. And honestly, harm coming to Benjamin is now like his greatest fear. He's already lost Rachel, who was the love of his life. He's lost Joseph, who was one of her sons and his favorite kid. And now he's worried that the man in Egypt is going to do something bad to Benjamin. And yet there's no other options for him except to send him. So let's see what he does. Verse 15. And so the men, they took this present and they took double the money with them and they took Benjamin. And they arose and they went down to Egypt and they stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, "Bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." And the man did as Joseph told him, and they brought the men to Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, "It's because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys." Okay, let's stop there. All right, so the boys, they go down to Egypt. They take Benjamin with them. And so Joseph sees that they've come and he sees that they've brought Benjamin with them. And he says to his steward, "All right, I want you to go and I want you to kill the fattened calf because these guys are going to dine with me today." And this is like the best food that Egypt has to offer, right? It's like their equivalent of steak and lobster, only not lobster because they're Jewish. But they're rolling out the finest foods, which is a big deal because remember, it's the middle of a famine and they're going to have this huge banquet. It's not a small deal. But Joseph, remember, he continues this ruse and he's got going. He speaks to his steward in Egyptian. He pretends like he doesn't understand his brothers. And they still don't understand. They don't know that Joseph is the man and that he understands them. And they don't know what is going on. And then the steward says to them in their language, he's like, "Okay, the man wants you to come inside now. So come in and close the door behind you." And they're like, "Wait, what? Like he wants us to go inside, away from all the witnesses? You know, we're actually just here to do business. We would prefer to do it outside where people see and nothing murdery can happen," right? And so they say to each other, like, so then they turn and they start talking to each other and they're like, "It's because of the money. He thinks we stole from him and now he's gonna make us slaves and he's gonna steal our donkeys. Our donkeys." Right? And I love that they mention these donkeys. They're worried about Joseph stealing their donkeys. Joseph is like the second most powerful man in the world right now, okay? He oversees food distribution in one of the most powerful nations. Like, he gives the word, things happen. He has wealth, he has power, he can order a fattened calf to be slaughtered in the middle of a famine, and it is, and the brothers are convinced that he wants to steal their donkeys. Now, why are they doing that? Why do they think that? Because they feel guilty, right? Remember in chapter 42, they discovered that the money had been returned to their sack. And in verse 28 of chapter 42, they say, "What is this that God has done to us?" Like, they recognize that the hand of God is behind the money that's been put back into their sack. They recognize that. And why do they think that God had something to do with the money coming back in? What does it say? Chapter 42, verse 42, or I'm sorry, chapter 42, verse 22. Someone actually can look at it. Like the last sentence of that verse, what does it say? 42:22, last sentence. It's a reckoning for his blood. It's a reckoning for his blood, right? So do you see what they're thinking right now? They're like, we almost killed our brother. We sold him into slavery. He begged us not to. We didn't listen to him. We sold him into slavery. And now God is bringing that back on our heads. God put the money back in our bags because he knows this is what we deserve. We deserve to be enslaved because we sent our brother to be enslaved. And now he's even going to steal our donkeys, right? They're so racked with guilt that they can't read the situation accurately. Joseph, he just wants them to come in and have dinner with them. But they can't see it. They think, no, this is God punishing us for selling our brother into slavery. The chickens are finally coming home to roost. Okay, and if you've ever, you know, when you feel guilty, you can live in this constant fear of the reckoning, All right, and that fear can be consuming. Now, I am I'm the oldest of four kids. I have three younger sisters. And one time when I was little, this was before the fourth one was born. So I was playing with my two younger sisters, and the sister who was the youngest at the time said a bad word. All right, and it wasn't that bad of a word. It was of a human body part, but for us little kids, this was a word that should not be said. And so I said to my sister, I said, Aaron, I'm going to go tell Dad what you said. And so I went downstairs. My dad was watching television, and I talked to him for a little bit, but I didn't say anything about what Aaron had said. And then I went back upstairs, and I said, Aaron, Dad wants you to come downstairs and explain to him what you did. Isn't that terrible? How many of you had older brothers that did stuff like that too, right? Older brothers are the worst, right? The only thing worse than an older brother is an older sister, right? So Aaron goes downstairs, and I told my other sister, Megan, what I had really done, and then we were laughing at it, Aaron was gone for a long time. And so finally she comes back up just really sheepishly, and we're like, what did he say? And she's like, nothing, he just kept watching TV. So she dodged a bullet. She didn't say anything, and she dodged a bullet. But honestly, that terrible awkwardness of being down there with my dad and knowing and thinking, like, he knows I'm in trouble. I'm going to be in big trouble. That was probably way worse than the actual trouble she would have been in if she had said what she did. And oftentimes that's the case. Guilt and this fear of the reckoning can be worse than the consequences themselves, the consequences of actually getting caught. And that's where Joseph's brothers are here, right? They're like, it's because of the money. God saw what we did, and now it's time for the reckoning. He's bringing it back on our heads. This guy, he's gonna bring us into his house, he's gonna enslave us, and he's gonna steal our donkeys. Steal our donkeys. So they're in trouble. But then they remember, hey, wait, we brought money. Verse 19. So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house, and they spoke with him at the door of the house. And they said, oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each person's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. And so we've brought it again with us, and we have brought other money down with us to buy food, and we don't know who put the money in our sacks. And this is the steward. It says, he replied, peace to you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money. And then he brought Simeon out to them. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and he had given their donkey fodder, and then he prepared a present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they had heard that he should eat bread there. So the brothers are like, look, we don't know what happened last time. We came down to buy grain. We brought this money with us. And when we got home, we found out that the money had been returned to us. And we don't know who did that, but we promise we weren't trying to steal from you. There was some kind of misunderstanding. And I love the steward's answer, because he says, God put that money in your bags. God put that money in your bags. And this is the most profound theological statement in the whole chapter, and it's spoken by a pagan Egyptian. Now, the steward, he thinks he's being sly with the brothers, because he's probably the one who put the money in the bag the first time. I mean, when you read through this, Joseph basically, when he wants something done, he tells the steward to do it. So the steward's probably the guy that put the money there. And so he's in on the ruse, and he thinks he's being like kind of tricky, and he's like, oh, I don't know where that money came from. God must have put that money in your bags. But God did put that money in their bags, right? We've seen throughout this whole story that God has been at work in everything that's happened. He's been directing the events. God's actions and humans' actions are not mutually exclusive, right? So God uses people's actions to accomplish his purpose. And so yes, the steward did put the money back in their bags, but God also did it as well. God was in control the whole time. So in chapter 42, the brothers, when they recognize God's hand in all of it, and they're like, God has put this money in our bags, and they think it's because of Joseph. They think it's the reckoning that God is punishing them for Joseph's blood. God did do it, but not for why they think. Right? He's saving them. He's not punishing them. He's saving them. He is restoring their family, healing their family, and they just don't see it. And so what else happens here? Simeon is returned, and they're allowed to wash their feet, and they're given food for their donkeys. Now, there's a couple of things that are going on here. First, you have this whole thing about their feet being washed. First of all, this would have been a sign of hospitality in the ancient world. But then in addition to that, there's something else too. There's a play on words. What was it that Joseph accused them of being in chapter 42? What is it? I'm making you guys work today. Spies, right? He accused them of being spies. Well, in Hebrew, a spy is literally someone who goes about on foot. Okay, the Hebrew word for spy is actually derived from the Hebrew word for foot. And so in chapter 42, the man accuses them of guys who go around by foot to spy on the land. And then in chapter 43, he washes their feet. But then there's another twist. Remember what they were worried about? They were worried that the man was going to steal their donkeys. And what does he do? Instead, he gives them food to feed their donkeys. And then there's a third twist. Do you guys remember, this is a little bit further back, do you guys remember what the brothers did after they threw Joseph into the cistern? What was the first thing they did? Do you remember? Anybody? What's that? They ate. They sat down and they had lunch, right? So Joseph is in this well and he's screaming for them just to, hey, don't do this thing. And they sit down and they have a meal. Well, now they're going to sit down and they're going to have another meal, only this time with Joseph. And so the brothers, they have all these ideas, fears circulating in their heads about what the man is going to do to them. They know they have blood on their hands. And they thought that the day of reckoning had come. It was karma. And in fact, the reality was all of their fears were unfounded. If you look at what actually happens to them, they just encounter grace after grace after grace. The band U2 writes in their song Grace, has this line, grace travels outside of karma. I love that. Grace travels outside of karma. Grace blesses when punishment is deserved. And the brothers, they don't know what to do with all of this. They're expecting karma and they receive grace. And it's right then that the man shows up. Verse 26. If I can find it. Now when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them, and they bowed down to him to the ground. And he inquired about their welfare, and he said, is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive? And they said, your servant, our father is well, he's still alive. And they bowed their heads, and they prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes, and he saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. And then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber, and he wept there. And then he washed his face, and he came out. And controlling himself, he said, serve the food. And they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that's an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. This is because he knows their birth order. That's why they're amazed. Portions are taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as theirs. And they drank, and they were merry with him. All right, so Joseph, he comes out, and the brothers, they're scared because they are expecting karma. And they're like, hey, you know, we brought you all these presents. Here's our money. Here's this gum. Here's this bomb. Here's this myrrh, right? They don't understand grace. They're trying to make amends, right? They're bringing offerings. They're like, here, take this money. Take this gum. Take this myrrh. Let me make up for what I did to you. And Joseph's like, yeah, whatever. How's your dad? Is he still alive? He doesn't want their money. He doesn't care about their gifts. He wants his family back. And then he sees Benjamin, and he can't take it anymore, and he excuses himself, and he goes off, and he just starts to weep. And then after he's composed himself, he comes back. And now, at this point, Joseph, he's in an odd spot because, you know, he's made peace with his afflictions, right? His wounds have turned into scars. He's happy with his new life. He's forgiven the past. He's moved on. But he never expected to come face to face with his brothers again. And now that he has, he doesn't know what to do. Just because you have forgiven someone doesn't mean that it's necessarily safe for you to be reconciled with them. And Joseph doesn't know whether it's safe for him to be reconciled to his brothers, because after all, the last time they were together, they tried to kill him. They threw him in a cistern, and he doesn't know if they're still those kinds of men. But he doesn't take revenge on them. Instead, he throws a party, and he goes all out. And it's like the best food, the best wine, everything. And then there's this detail on the very, very end of the passage. It says that Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's. Now, this does not mean that they didn't have enough to eat, but Benjamin did. Everybody had plenty. Benjamin just had way more than he could ever eat. And that whole idea of giving somebody more food in the ancient world was a sign of honor, okay? It's a sign that somebody was favored or that they were better than the others. So what is Joseph doing here? He's giving Benjamin the Egyptian equivalent of a coat of many colors. He's doing for Benjamin exactly what his dad did for him. And he's doing it right in front of his brothers because he wants to see how they'll respond to that. But that's for next week. So in a moment, the band's going to come back up, and we're going to transition to our time of response. We've got a couple more songs to sing, and we're gonna celebrate the Lord's Supper together. If this is your first time here, know at this time, like, you're welcome to come forward, but you don't have to. If it's uncomfortable for you, you are free to remain where you are and sing, but you're also welcome to come forward. While we sing, while we celebrate the Lord's Supper, I'd also love to pray for you, and so I will be back there in that corner. Johnny Pearson, the elder who did the announcements and welcome, he'll be back there. He'd love to pray for you as well. But before we transition to the response time, there is a theme in this passage that I do want us to think about. Consistently, throughout the whole passage, the brothers, they act out of fear, right? When they're back at home with Jacob, you know, they're terrified of the man and what he's going to do to them. And then when they get to Egypt, they consistently misinterpret everything Joseph does to them. He's just bringing us in here because he's going to enslave us and steal our donkeys. And episode after episode, they're just afraid. They're afraid of this judgment. They're afraid of the reckoning. And yet, if you look at Joseph's behavior in the passage, he's nothing but kind to them. Right? He orders this fattened calf to be killed. You know, he rejects their money. He's like, I don't need that stuff. Like the steward just laughs off this whole misunderstanding. Oh, God must have put that in your bags. And then he lets them relax, washes their feet, gives them food for their donkeys. And then, you know, when they try to give him these gifts, he's like, you know what, he's not interested in that. He just wants to hear how their dad's doing. Just wants to see Benjamin. And then finally, he prepares this great banquet for them. Grace travels outside of karma. The Apostle Paul writes in Colossians 2, 13 through 16, he says, "In you who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross." And Paul tells us, he says, you know, we were as good as dead because of our transgressions. But in Jesus, God has made us alive. And then he adds, God has canceled this record of debt, nailing it to the cross. And the image that he gives us is you can picture Jesus on the cross. Imagine with it a list, a record of everything that you've ever done, and it's just the nails just obliterate it, destroy it. It's up there on the cross. It's been destroyed. Like the brothers, you are forgiven. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? We've all made mistakes. Some of us have made big mistakes. But whatever it is that you've done, it was nailed to the cross, and the debt has been canceled. You are forgiven. And like Joseph, Jesus doesn't want your money. He doesn't want your balm. He doesn't want your gum. Doesn't want your myrrh. He certainly doesn't want your donkey or your Furby. He just wants you. And he's invited you to dine with him.